Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for amazing visual artist and creative entity, Mr. Guac.
Hi.
Guac, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah.
Man, I'm so stoked to have you here. We can see we got a couple of your pieces around, but I know this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, we're trying, man.
Yeah, what you're doing. We're seeing that. So I gotta kind of start at the start. That's kind of my game on press rewind. Tell me when art comes into your life and this ambition to make something out of nothing, make your ideas into a thing, starts to weave into your life.
Oh, that's a really good question. So I want to say just being an artist, a creator from young, being a kid, it just was something you've always wanted to pursue, but never really did it up until this past year. So come January, I was like, you know what, I'm going to take this serious. So my art journey really just starts in January of this year.
We're talking 6 months ago.
Yeah. But I have a lot of tenacity, so I'm pushing like crazy. I'm putting everything I have into it. But I have a catalog of ideas that I want to make. So it's just kind of going through one at a time. And
so what's it like as a kid when this creativity starts to be clearly part of your DNA?
Yeah, that's so funny because I'm realizing as an adult, you get rewarded for being acting out and doing wildish things. But as a kid, you're getting punished. Mm. So it was really difficult being a kid and being creative because you want to entertain the class with ideas. You want to do big things. You want to paint on buildings. And you can't do that
right
when you're a kid. But as an adult, you're getting rewarded for it. It's kind of interesting how it flips like that.
So what was the transition when you were a kid? Were you able to exercise any of your creativity, or was this, you were just channeled into a different road?
I think like in every aspect, any job that I took would be a creative outlet, and it all kind of formed into what I am now. So like if I did auto body, that's very artistic, you know, it's a job for sure, but just working with Bondo and, you know, bending out metal and adjusting parts, it kind of works its way into being artistic in that own realm. And then as an adult, or not an adult, in my art career, now I'm using those methods in my art career. Same with like wood shop, you know, in high school you're doing basic wood shop stuff and it kind of translates right into my art career now.
So was that what school was like for you? You were always a hands-on doer. That was what your career path went into?
Oh, I'm severely, what's the right word for it? I ain't good at school. I don't do words. Yeah. But anything that was like shop or acting or anything that was hands-on, A++++. And then every academic, terrible. Yeah. F. So it just naturally kind of pushed me into that direction, maybe out of necessity, because not being able to spell well or good with words or that kind of thing. It just kind of pushed me into like, all right, well, I guess I have to use the hands to kind of make a living.
Right.
But it just keeps, you know, moving from one thing to the other. That's all in direction of doing artwork. And it just kind of like evolved into becoming an artist.
So you said you just started doing your art career full time 6 months ago. So that's a heck of a road in between. You're getting out of high school and you think you got to start a career, how are you navigating this road when you clearly have one strong skill set you want to lean into?
I don't know. It just happened. That's a hard question to answer.
Did you go to college?
No, I'm a high school dropout. Yeah. No, I didn't make it through high school. Yeah. I definitely pursued, trades. That was like the direction I went in.
Okay.
Just because the type of brain I have, the type of hands I have, I'm like, it made sense to do trades. So home remodeling and that kind of stuff. I did really well at it. But it wasn't fulfilling. And so I realized about midway last year, it's like, you know, I think I want to give art a try. Now I position myself in my job to where I have free time. I still make my living through my job. I work on machines and stuff. I'm very dialed into like a very niche business. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of techs that do the work that I do. So
how'd you end up in that spot?
The owner reached out to me, saw that I had a home remodeling company. He's like, hey, you're a perfect fit for our company. I really want you to come work for me. And I was like, okay. And so I just shut down my company, which I had just one other guy, and we're just doing renovations on houses.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of worked my way into doing machinery at that company. And then now I'm out on the road just a couple days a week, but that gives me the free time the rest of the week to just pursue art. And so I'm, not that I'm trying to replace that job, but I'm trying to like make art the thing.
Right.
Know? Like, so I'm pushing heavy on art from January. So I've done a few art projects throughout, you know, the last 5 years of just making random things just because I want to be creative.
Yeah.
It's a good outlet. But this year, this is like the push year.
Well, that's leads me to my next question. What's it like for you when you're doing the home remodeling and you're doing these other things? Are you feeling this nag to create, or are you just like itching it mildly enough by doing these types of projects that it's like almost satisfying it?
Dude, that's perfect. The way you described it, I couldn't say it better. That was perfect. Yeah. It's like that itch. You're getting a little bit of scratch, but it's like, you're not diving into like the full art because you're doing someone else's art. Someone else created the image that they want in their house, and you're just going in and doing it for them. Same thing with art. When someone's like, hey, I have a commission for you,
right?
I want you to do this. It's like, it's kind of scratching the itch, but it's not itching it, you know? But doing my own commissions, my own artwork. Yeah. That's that like, oh,
so what's so it good. Take me back to the day, maybe a couple of year ago or whatever, when you were like, you know what, I'm going to create something. What was the first something when you decided you're just going to let it loose? What was the impetus for some of these things we see here?
Graffiti culture, I've always been fascinated with. And I would, as a kid, I would go to the train yards and just look at the new trains that just pulled into the yard and all the new graffiti, buildings, abandoned buildings. Just I would go to bad parts of town, just probably from the childhood that I had. Being alone was like better than being at home sometimes.
Right.
So I would be kind of like not in the best parts of town looking at graffiti. So but it helped me a lot for some reason, just being in inspired. That environment. Yeah, inspired by the art. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And people going against the grain. I have a huge fascination with murals and graffiti, just spray paint art essentially. So I made a giant life-size spray paint can, kind of like a tribute to like, hey, thank you for what you guys are doing. Let me give back my way of like thanking you, I guess. Yeah.
Because your idea was to make these large scale sculptures. That was
Yeah. You see the Ninja Turtle movie from like the 80s or I think the 90s, early 90s, the mutant goo gets into like the dandelion. It makes a giant dandelion. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
From that movie, that's where I've always been, man, I love oversized stuff. So from there, that's what I was like, if I was to make art, I'd want to do big stuff. And it just kind of went from there.
So how long do you think you stewed on that idea before you let the spray paint can out into the world?
When did Ninja Turtles come
out? So you're saying that long you were thinking, probably. I'm going to build it.
Well, I mean, it's just that in the back of your mind.
Gotcha.
Like, yeah. Like if I was to do this one thing, if I was to buy that one car, you know, like whatever that thought is, it's the art one was like, yeah, oversized stuff. It was always in the back of the mind. Yeah. So just kind of went for it.
Okay.
And so it's just, I've fallen into that niche and I'm just pushing in that one direction. Who knows where I'll be a year from now, but just right now I'm pushing in like oversized. I'm just kind of branding myself as like an oversized pop culture sculptor.
Right.
Yeah.
And it has a lovely onomatopoeia to it.
Yeah. You know, it took me a long time to like say that perfectly.
Guaranteed. I'm not even going to try it.
Yeah, just staring in the mirror like, yeah.
That's a good one. Okay. So after you make this spray paint can, are you thinking to yourself, this is the first of many? Or was it kind of like, oh, there?
Probably the first of many. In my mind, I'm like, I want to mass produce these and like just flood the market with them. And
felt that way right away?
Yeah. Immediately. I'm like, I would love to just make tons of these and make, because the more you make, the cheaper they are, because you're able to have more of them. They're not one of one, which would be a crazy expensive price. I've sold several of them. They're expensive to make, you know.
Well, like, yeah. What's the rough dimensions of them, just to give people an idea?
So they're all different. Ideally, or not ideally, but probably 6 foot tall. Is probably like between 5.5 and 6 foot tall. What I try to do, if you look at all my art pieces, is imagine a 100 foot tall person. What would they be holding? You know, if it was this cup would probably be about 6 feet tall, 5.5 to 6 feet tall. If a 100 foot tall person was holding it.
So that's the mantra for all the pieces.
Yeah. Same with, if you look at all my pieces, they're all right about that size.
What made you decide that? That's an interesting thing.
Yeah. I think I read a book. I know I read a book called The 10X Rule, and it's just about pushing yourself 10 times the limit. Mm-hmm. If you think you could run a mile, run 10 miles, that type of energy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, all right, if I'm going to make a piece of art, I'm going to make it 10 times bigger. Like, all right, what would 10 times bigger? So you take a little spray can and, you know, 10 times bigger is probably about 6 feet tall.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are some of the other, what came after the spray paint can? Because it wasn't just mass producing those right out of the gate, right?
No. Yeah. That was the first push.
And you weren't even being like real public with your art at that point. This was just still the you trying to.
I'm still not public with it. I just throw it on Instagram and TikTok. Like that's, I mean, I guess that's super public.
Yeah.
But that's about as much as I push. But yeah, I think it was the SpongeBob ice cream was like the next big production piece that I started putting out. I know I always make like different art pieces that kind of fit into a certain piece of my house or whatever. Like I might need this weird wall. I need something with this type of color. I'd make something, but the SpongeBob ice cream cone is like kind of the next thing that I did in the lineage.
So yeah. At what point do you start posting this stuff?
I'm terrible at posting. I post.
You should be, because you're better at creating things.
Man, yeah. I'm happy to work on the project, and right when it's finished, I'm like, man, I should have did B-roll. I should have filmed myself from the side angle of sculpting, and because people always ask, like, hey, tutorial on how you make it. I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. I'll do it next time. I won't. I pretty much only show progress. Like if I'll push for a week on a piece, and then I'll be like, hey, yo, I'm making this piece. Check it out. This is kind of the midway mark of this piece, and then the finished product at the end. If you go through all my content, it's typically it's only finished pieces. And that's my fault. Like it's just I'm not a good internet creator. I just make art and then I post it.
It can be hard to have to wear both of those hats simultaneously. Yeah. We've talked to a lot, I shouldn't say a lot, but a fair few people who have expressed that same sentiment.
Yeah. There's a market. Someone can get out there and make a lot of money just coming and filming artists do their thing. Yeah,
yeah, no kidding. They're like the fish that swim on the side of a shark. You need that guy.
Man, I'll pay greatly to have someone just follow me and do stuff. Yeah.
No kidding. Well, yeah. Someone watching this will make sure we got contacts below. So you mentioned your house, and I know your house is in an interesting endeavor.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about how your house kind of becomes your gallery and vacation rental?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a child at heart. I kind of refuse to grow up. I want to stay young-minded. And so I've been pushing with bright colors. And they call it dopamine decor. That's actually like the official
category?
Name.
Dang.
Yeah, the official name is dopamine decor or maximalist. So you have the minimalists that are just super clean, like wood pieces, marble, granite, that kind. Ours is just bright colors and weird textures. And so I have a house, and then on that property there's this little casita, teeny little like mother-in-law suite that's detached. And I'm like, hey, let's make that an Airbnb. Let's make it crazy fun colors, 80s 90s nostalgic pieces in there. And so I started just making artwork for that, and I'm like, you know what, actually let's make that to where it helps me fund my art career, to where I can actually take that leap and really pursue artwork. So the money I make from that's like, cool, now I have supplies to make the next project.
Right.
And that's kind of what's funding the entire art career. Because frankly, being an artist, you don't make crazy good money until you make crazy good money, you know? So
yeah,
the Airbnb does help quite a bit. So I use that space as my gallery showpiece. When I get a piece done, I throw it inside my Airbnb, and it's always cycling through new pieces that I'm bringing in. And people have trashed some pieces, like the giant SpongeBob, if you saw that. I had a bunch of rowdy little early 20-year-olds that came in. They got super drunk, and they just beat the thing to hell. Punched a bunch of holes in the eyeballs and stuff, and I had to fix it all. But just kind of weird that someone would decimate a piece of art. But
right, especially as innocent as SpongeBob.
SpongeBob, come on.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So what kind of reactions do you get from people when they first come in there?
The average person is probably between 20 and like 50. That's about maybe a little bit older than that too, but that's like the average. And they're all from Orlando. I don't know why, but I get Orlando people all the time. But I've had people fly in from out of country, or not out of country, like out of state, just to stay there, which is wild to me that they'd come there specifically for the Airbnb. But their reaction, I don't really know what their reaction is when they get into the Airbnb. I don't have like a way of seeing that. But
yeah, right.
When they're walking up, the whole outside of it, I have a giant shopping cart outside and there's painting going up. So sometimes, like, I was outside a few times and I look over as they're opening the door and they're like, what? Like, yeah, they're real excited. Yeah.
So what was the impetus, for want of a better way of putting it, to circle around this like 80s, 90s pop culture? I mean, because you could make oversized anything,
yeah,
and it would immediately make people want to pay attention to it.
Sure. Every piece will resonate with a different person. I just make pieces that I want. All my art is something that I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Lollipops is because that's my favorite type of lollipop. The juice box, I mean, just looking at that, it's like, man, instantly back to grade school, playing outside, being sweaty little boy, riding bikes. Best era of life is riding bikes and climbing trees, you know? So when I look at that, it instantly brings me back. Not so much anymore. That brings me to art now that I'm...
Right, now you've got a different association to it. But that's why you make new pieces.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, all the art pieces I make, it's just something I think is cool or interesting, or that little hit of dopamine, you know, when you look at it.
So what are the main techniques you use in building this stuff? I know you mentioned, like, you know, your shop class type things that we can all envision, but this is, you know, pretty unique. What of your process can you describe?
Every piece is different. So if I can luck out and use wood, I'm very familiar with wood. You know, like, I've been using it majority of my life, building tree houses, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If I luck out with wood, I don't have to troubleshoot how to make it. But if it's a completely different avenue, a different material, medium, I have to learn how to use that entirely. So like resin, I'm like, I've never used resin before. I have to learn how to use epoxy resin, styrofoam, never really familiar with it. Dove down that rabbit hole of like how to use styrofoam, vinyl. There's so many different metal, anything you can think of material wise, like that's a new medium that you have to not just learn, but like perfect and like nail it. There's been so many times, like just this juice box, I've made, I think, 20 of those juice boxes before I've got the one, the finished, like the good one. And so I'd make one, doesn't work, burn it, trash it, throw it in the, and I don't give it away because it's not perfect.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I want that finished, polished piece. So yeah, it took me 20 of them to make, and each one would probably be maybe $50 to $100 of materials and time, not including time, but like, you know, like $50 to $100 on each one. So it's probably $2,500 worth of
R&D.
Mistakes. Yeah.
For no other way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned you go through all these different iterations of these, and you make a lot of time and investment.
Yeah.
Both investment of time and investment. Yeah. How do you get to the point where you can give yourself this freedom to tackle these things that you're unfamiliar with, like vinyl or resin or one of these umpteen million metals, instead of just working with wood or trying to stay in your lane? What do you think the parts are of your personality, of your process, that give you this freedom to fail, this freedom to try?
That is one of the best questions I've ever gotten. That's perfect.
Thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this opportunity to give a shout out to our number one supporter, Tweed Suit Shop.
Hey guys, I'm Donald with Tweeds. If you're ever in the market for a custom suit, tuxedo, sport coat, whatever it might be, we'd love the opportunity for you to come in, take all your measurements, make sure we get you the perfect fit and the perfect look. We'd love to see you at one of our locations.
So remember, if you want to get yourself fresh like this, tip to tail, see Tweeds at one of their locations in Sarasota, St. Pete, or Tampa. Please enjoy the rest of the episode.
The process is the art. To me, this is not art. This is the finished piece. Yes, absolutely, this is the art. To me, that is not the art. The art is the entire process. So learning how to use that new material, that is what I'm like so jazzed about. I get really excited because it's, I'm having to go down these rabbit holes. I'm calling manufacturers of different materials, and I'm all over the country talking to people and like, hey, what is this? Can you explain what this thing is? So you saw like the giant tech deck I don't know if you saw that.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so I made a giant tech deck, and I'm like, that's called a blister pack.
Yep.
How the heck do you make a giant plastic blister
pack? Well, funny you should say that, because that's one of the pieces specifically I want to ask you about, because I saw it in the process before you had the blister pack part on it, and my exact thought to myself was, how are you going to vacuum form something that big?
You said it, vacuum forming. So that's called a blister packet when it's real small.
Yeah.
And then once you go over a certain size, it becomes a vacuum heat forming table. That is definitely, that's an industry. So I first learned all about blister packets for weeks, learning, YouTube and talking to manufacturers and different distributors on types of material.
Dang.
And then from there, I'm like, oh, that's a waste of time, because it's not even a blister pack, it's a vacuum forming. That's a whole nother industry I have to look into. So again, it was weeks talking to plastic manufacturers, found people in Tampa. Luckily, I found companies in Tampa. They kind of gave me a lot of information. And so I had to physically build a machine that can heat up plastic, and then it pulls down and vacuum forms around a mold. What do they call that? Someone will correct me. I don't know what it's called, but basically
like a form.
A buff. Yeah, a form that it kind of melts down to. And that form, I made it, you know, 1 inch too high, and now the sides are thin. And so now I had to remake that. And then it just.
Oh my God. So you literally made the thing to make the thing.
Oh, yeah. And the amount of things that I've made just to get to the final one, I probably made 7 different buffs, molds, before I could get the right one. I went through probably 10 different plastic materials, and the plastic's not cheap, you know, and you have to buy it in bulk.
Right.
So I'm buying this bulk material and it doesn't even work. And it's like, oh, that was $1,800 trash. Maybe I can use it for the next art project, hopefully.
Yeah,
and
right.
So just, that's the process. To me, that's the art. That is like the thing that people don't understand. Like, how'd you do this? Like, that's what I get excited about. I'm pulling things off that most people would be like, I have no idea how you're doing that. But in the industry of vacuum forming, people probably look at that piece like, oh, that's a good idea. I could have done that. And it's probably, their mind's probably exploding with ideas that they can do. And it's just weird how you have to kind of go into these little avenues just to get one piece done. So yeah, the tech deck was probably like $3,000 worth of trial and error.
Just for the plastic
for
bit.
One good plastic piece. But I got it. So now I can replicate them and I can keep pumping them out. The more I make, the cheaper it'll be. So
okay.
I've only made one, but
it's very cool. We'll definitely have links to all this stuff, but it's cool. Very cool to see the tech deck next to the little one that it was based on.
Yeah.
So how does that start for you? You literally just holding a tech deck in your hand. You're thinking, you know, wait a minute, I can make one 10 times this big.
Totally. I had to find that tech deck. To find an early 2000s, the whole point of that project was to preserve a Tony Hawk board from the early 2000s. And that tech deck was my first tech deck that I ever purchased, I ever got. Saved up my money, went to, I think it was Walmart at the time, bought my very first tech deck, and it was the Hawk board, the skeleton one.
Yeah.
So I had to find the right color, and so to find an early 2000s tech deck still in the packaging, I paid a crazy amount of money. Well, actually, my wife bought it for me as a birthday present.
Oh.
And so when I got that, I was like, that's the one. I have to do that. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. I made that one. And I had to find the board in decent enough shape. It's hard to find early 2000 Tony Hawk boards, but I got 12 of them. It took me a long time, but I got 12 of them. So I'll be making 12 more of these preserves. Like, it's a display piece for Tony Hawk, you know? I don't know how to explain it other than I made it so you can preserve a piece of skateboarding history.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And Tony Hawk saw it and he liked it on Instagram. That blew my mind.
Nice. Well, so I mean, how could you not? It's very cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
So when you have a project like that and you get, like in this case, 12 of them, do you think to yourself that I'm going to make just a limited run of 12 and I'll number these 12 and then I'll never make another one of these again?
A good question. Yeah. I think I'm going to start with those 12 and pump those out and just kind of see what happens. I have a crazy price tag on it right now just because I don't want to sell the first one. If someone buys it, totally, I'll sell it. But
right.
My goal is to just keep making more and more of these and give people the opportunity to buy an early 2000s skateboard from Tony, not from Tony Hawk, but, you know, Tony Hawk board.
Yeah, right.
And I'm leaving the sticker. Like, if I find one, there's one that has Avenged Sevenfold sticker on it. And I'm like, you know what? That's part of the skateboarding culture at that time. I'm leaving it on there. There's grind marks and road rash. The tires are dirty. I'm leaving all of that because I want it's a, you know, I'm saving that. It's time stamped. So that's kind of how I'm doing it. But I'm also going to put out tech decks with different backing, you know, like the back, the cardboard part of the box. Mm-hmm. I'll be putting out different styles with like new skateboards for skateboard companies. And I want to do a Jackass one. I've been talking with the Jackass.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Dave England.
Yeah.
From Jackass. We've been talking. I'm trying to convince him to do a Jackass board with me. And like, dude, I'll do all of it. Just say yes and I can do it. And I'll make the whole thing. It'd be really cool.
Yeah. And that really opens up a lot of doors for limited runs and things you can do for specific partnerships and things.
Yeah. Because who wouldn't want a giant tech deck in their living room?
Yeah, well, that was one thing I was going to ask you. Where outside of something that's like theme specific, like a game room or whatever, do you picture your stuff being in like more commercial settings?
That'd be cool.
Or they wind up in man caves or?
Yeah, I don't know. I never get to see like the final product of where they go. Rarely, people hardly ever tag me when they'll buy stuff, but they don't tag me like, hey, it's on the wall.
Right.
So I don't know like where it's going.
We got to get everybody in the comments to post up if they got any of your pieces where they're at.
Yeah. Every now and then I'll get tagged on TikTok or Instagram where someone's filming something and they see one of my pieces in the background. So I can sometimes see it, but majority of the people are maximalists that buy my stuff, which if you were to look at their pages, it's their housing is just wild, just crazy color. And yeah.
See, I'm foreign to that entirely. Yeah. So like, you know, I picture like
super clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you working on now? What's the next thing?
I'm working on a life size Zapper gun, Nintendo Zapper gun, the orange one.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm doing the orange one and the gray one. Yeah. So that's my latest. And then I try not to have multiple projects going. I have severe ADD and ADHD. So like I'm really hyper focused when I'm into one thing and then blink of an eye, I'm on to the next thing, and I'll never go back to that first thing.
Yeah.
I do it until it's fun, until the fun stops, and then I'm done with it. So my goal is only have a couple things going, so I have to push through that suck where I'm like, okay, I don't want to work on this gun right now, but get it finished, and I know I'll be happy, and I will be, you know, when I finish.
How long did it take you, or what was the process of getting conscious of how your creative highway is going to be ridden? Because that's not a thing, you know what I mean? You could have just dirt roaded yourself perpetually. How did you get to the point where you were able to work around what you knew your obstacles were?
I think just making lists. So if I have an idea, I'm like, all right, I'm going to push heavy on this list. This one thing I'll write on the list, push heavy on it.
Like literally write?
Oh, physically. In my phone, I have a list. I should just let you read through it. A huge list. Like, I mean, it's long of art ideas and it's very rewarding. I do the little yellow emoji thumbs up. So when I finish a piece, I throw a thumbs up next to it. And I just, that's a little dopamine hit. And I'm like, I want another thumbs up. So I either look for something that's easy to do or I look for something I'm like, that's wild, out of the box. I want to go crazy. And it's like the Zapper gun.
That's what I was going to say. How does the Zapper gun fit into that?
Majority of it's wood. So the body of it's sculpted out of wood and Bondo. And then the handle is styrofoam, hard coated with Bondo finish, and then there's PVC piping on the top. I can work with all those. I know every one of those mediums, so I can work with them easily. The trick is getting that trigger pull, because you got to have that trigger pull.
That snap. Yeah.
Very important. So that's the only thing I'm kind of working on that I don't quite know how to do, but luckily I know how to use all those mediums. It worked for that specific project, so I pumped that out in like a week. I was able to get that one relatively quick. But yeah, that took me like 2 months because cardboard. I don't know how to use those mediums, but you know, you learn over time. Yeah.
Right. So, what was the impetus for the Zapper gun? It's just it falls into this category, or you have a personal attachment to that too, and it's really you're just checking down this list of.
Yeah. So the next big, I've been doing a specific art show that's, I'm calling it Nostalgic Relics.
Mm-hmm.
So just things from my childhood. So it's this kind of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. The next show that I'm doing, I want to do games and video games. I haven't really said anything about that, but that's kind of that's what I'm doing. Anything game related. So I'm making, you know, life-size Tony Hawk Pro Skater CD, you know, not DVD, but, you know, like the plastic PlayStation 1, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm making a large CD case that opens up and you have the CD inside of it with the pamphlet and all that. I'm doing the zapper gun to go with it. The Furby chair kind of fits into it. It's kind of like a game, you know, it's like kiddish, whatever. But I have a handful already made and a bunch of stuff that I'm going to be coming out with that are, it's all based around game stuff. So like pieces from Mousetrap, you know, Monopoly pieces, but everything's life size. The Rock'em Sock'em robot.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's part of that collection of an art show, basically.
So your pieces are all so large. We got that part out of the way. What do you, how do you see them ideally being exhibited other than something like your Airbnb? What's, do you want to have like your own meow wolf, for want of a better way of putting it?
Oh, come on. Let's go. I would love that. Yeah. If I ever had the opportunity, yeah, that would be definitely a check off the list. I would love
that. You get the thumbs up emoji for that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I should put it in there and try to get that thumb. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Would you want to curate like a whole experience? Could you see yourself doing something like that?
From start to finish?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're, because your piece is already, like you said, you see that and it instantly puts you back to, for me, sitting on the pier at the lake. You know, I remember that Ecto Cooler 1000%. If you had a whole warehouse or whatever full of that, imagine the sensory overload, you know.
Not
like there aren't things like that already. I'm just wondering if you would be interested in doing something like that in your own niche, since it is so immediately powerful.
I mean, I kind of am in a sense. I mean, with the Airbnb, I'm already, that was the first outlet. That was kind of like the testing grounds. My warehouse, I just built like a 2,800 square foot warehouse.
Sweet.
On the property. That's my art studio. I'm outfitting the inside of it to look like a New York cityscape.
Oh, very cool.
When you're inside, you feel like you're outside. So it has like garage roll-up doors and there's a convenience store. But when you go in the convenience store, that's my studio where I do my artwork. So I'm already kind of testing the waters in that, going, pushing in that direction. I would not want to be like the front man in a Meow Wolf situation where I'm the one doing it solo. I'd want to be a part of a team where we're all together coming up with ideas. Like, all right, how are we going to execute it? That's the art, right? Like,
yeah,
how
exactly.
are we going to execute it?
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was saying. I guess that's the, I guess you fall into that adage that the man that enjoys the walk will walk further than the man that enjoys the destination.
Okay. Yeah.
You're enjoying the walk over there.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, absolutely.
So the game thing, are you going to try to have an installation for that, or are you going to change the theme of the Airbnb?
No, the Airbnb is just, it's its own thing just to help support the art career. I'm trying to do traveling art shows.
Okay.
So that's kind of my goal. So I've already did one show actually on this road, like 30 seconds that way, Planned Parenthood building right there.
Nice.
Yeah. There's an art gallery in the floor of that place. I did a show there with two other local artists. And then I did an art show up in Nashville, Tennessee, about a month ago with another artist. That was like a collaborative piece we did. We made a spray paint can wrapped in carpet, a rug, because she's a very gifted rug maker.
Very cool.
She makes like sculptures out of rugs, like super unique. So I teamed up with her. We did a show up there. Really cool. I want to go out west to the West Coast and do a couple art shows out there. I have galleries lined up. I just want to make sure I have the perfect art pieces ready for those shows. But ideally, I want my art to be from either put up in gallery places where people can come in and like little, I don't know what you would call that, but they would come in exhibits, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
kind of walk it, yeah. From there to mansions would be cool. If someone wants to put a Rock'em Sock'em robot in a mansion, like super polished marble, whatever. But then also like in a normal house, a 2-bedroom house with kids, like have a giant, I don't care.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a beautiful rec room piece.
Yeah, yeah. Like anyone that's interested in owning my piece, I don't care where it's at. Yeah, I don't.
Do you have your stuff available in any retail setting now, or is it all directly from you?
Yeah, just for me, yeah. I'd love to get into a retail situation, yeah, if there was an opportunity for something like that.
Like a gallery to have your pieces in it.
Love that, yeah. yeah, have a home base, that would be stellar. Yeah.
So, yeah. But for now, you kind of get to do like a little gypsy thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Travel around.
Yeah, I'm traveling. Yeah.
How does that work? Do you have to like rent a U-Haul? I mean, you're almost taking more shit than a band would.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a 16-foot trailer. I have it strategically packed to where there's levels of everything. Everything's bungeed and whatever. And
you got to make some Tetris pieces.
I have. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So
there you go.
It's all crammed into there perfectly. The tighter you pack it, the safer it is. It won't be moving around. So it's packed in perfect. And my vehicle can tow it no problem. So yeah, the Tennessee was like a test. Make sure I can go there and back, no issues. I brought spare tires and everything.
There you
go. No issues. So I'm ready for the West Coast. Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really cool that your pieces have so much of your dexterity and your passion to make things in them. But yeah. You see things like this and how perfect some of it is. You know, there's some technology involved in there. How do you kind of straddle the road between being good with your hands and just wanting to be a doer, but all of the new technology that's just at your fingertips like nuts that can enhance what you're doing?
Yeah, that is a scary thought. I feel bad for artists that have been doing art for the last 20 years, and then there's new technology that just instantly puts them out, you know, or a machine. There's machines that can go in and, you know, cut styrofoam to, if I want to make this, I would have to sculpt this out of hand. This is a bad example. If I wanted to make this, I would sculpt this all out of styrofoam, you know, and have to get all these little pieces perfectly. But there's a machine that can scan this and few seconds.
Laser carve it out.
Carve it out and it's done before the day's over. Just, it puts people out of business. So I feel bad for those people that are been doing art for so long. So it is kind of cool that I'm going through so many different avenues trying to just make a finished piece, because I'm getting diversified. My portfolio is growing as I'm growing.
Right.
You know.
Is it tempting to say I'll get a CNC machine or I'll get a laser engraver or I'll...
Yeah, I mean...
Or does that ruin the walk?
It does, in a sense. I like the hands-on, personally. If I was doing high bulk, there was a company that was like, hey, I want 50 of these units, 100%, I'd probably go to a company that does the machining.
Right.
But if it was just a machining where my hands don't touch at all, honestly, I would just tell that person, hey, just go there with this file and print it yourself. Because you're not even using me at that point. You're using a machine to make art. Here you go. I'm not interested in that. Like, I want to be hands-on and make it myself. Yeah.
How long does it take you? I know you mentioned a couple of these, but like, you know, the zapper gun, you said take you a couple of days, couple of weeks. Do you have an average amount of time pieces take you, or it's just it's done when it's done always?
Yeah, yeah, because everything's so different. So, yeah, there's no set time on any piece. Yeah, again, that's a box. That should not take as long as it did, but I had to find the right type of box. You know, there's a lot of cardboard. There's a lot of different types of cardboard out there. So to find one that would work the way that worked took me a while.
Yeah, the cardboard rabbit hole is one a lot of people avoid.
Yeah.
No one knows what's down the cardboard rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's a dangerous world down there.
Yeah. So man, I don't want to get you out of here just yet, but I do want to find out, like, what is your dream project? What do you see yourself making when you say to yourself, man, there, I did it? Or did it start like that with the spray paint can? When you saw the first can built, did you think to yourself, there, I did it, now I can do it? Or is there still like a piece that you're waiting to scratch?
Such a good question. I feel like there's so many of them. Yeah, there's so many pieces I want to make. It just, time, material's expensive, you know, time and material. But yes, there's so many I can't wait to make. But I can't tell you what they are yet.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But they're coming. Yeah. They're coming, yeah, for sure.
So let me ask you this, kind of on a little bit more of a personal note. How much did you see your life changing as you were able to make the shift into devoting more time to your art instead of having to just do a 9-to-5 or whatever?
Not much.
No?
No, because I'm a doer. I just do things, you know, like I was trying to become a professional DJ at one point, and then I'm like, nah, that's dumb. I don't want to do that anymore. Let's do this instead. And I want to be a professional airsofter, fill in the blank, car guy. I'm a doer. I like to do things, and art is a thing that I'm doing. Hopefully I stick with it. I hope I don't give up on it, but
right.
Yeah, that's.
But I mean, did you feel like, not even to be kitschy about it, but do you feel like you started sleeping better once you were able to start creating more?
Yeah.
Do you feel like, you know, life started to seem like it was going more at your pace once you were able to create more?
Yeah, that's fair. I would say totally. The outlet that art gives me is huge. It's not, people talk about that, like musicians are like, man, once I start playing, it's just like, I could sleep better. Just the anxiety leaves me. It's a real thing. Like
right.
Doing art, that creative outlet, I guess if you have that pent up and you're not letting it out, it can do something to you. So by letting it out, man, it's very rewarding. But it's also so frustrating because I have an idea of what it should look like. Musician, I have that sound in my mind. You can't get it out. It is infuriating when you have this image in your mind. You know you have the ability. You can't do it. Come on. That is so soul crushing. But then when you get it,
it's so motivating.
It's a good day.
It's equally motivating.
Yeah. It's a good day. Yeah.
So what keeps you, I know you said that you enjoy the journey. You don't mind learning. You don't mind having these challenges, but what are some of the challenges you face that do give you that teeth grit where it's like, oh, God damn it. Not again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Money.
Well, that's it. At least
shocker.
That's a solvable problem.
yeah. It's expensive doing this stuff. Yeah. I have a really cool wife, so she fully supports the whole process.
She's amen.
Not
shouts
once,
out to all the cool wives.
Oh my gosh. For real. She's been nothing but cool and supportive, which gives me that freedom to push a little bit harder, but I want to be responsible about it. It's easy for me to go out and drop $8,000 on materials to get a bunch of projects going, and that fulfillment of pursuing it's so exciting. I want to be respectful to her. I want to do it the right way and only work on a few of them at a time and order materials a little bit at a time. If the Airbnb is going heavy and doing really well, I'm like, all right, maybe I'll spend a little bit more and like get this project going even faster. And or if people are buying art, you know, that's obviously that's another whole avenue. I don't make art for profit though, if that makes sense. Like I don't, when I make a piece, I'm not, how much can I make from it? I'm making it for me, and then I put it up for sale. And if it sells, like, oh, cool, like I made money on it. But that's, the goal was not to make money. So I'm going off topic.
No, that's all good. Yeah. Off topic is free range.
Yeah, all right, cool.
So, well, that actually brings me to another question. You made the analogy between what you're doing in musicians, because it is a lot the same thing, regardless of what your discipline of creation is, or it seems to ultimately boil down to being a lot of the same thing, regardless of what your discipline of creation is. Mm. Oh, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, it sounded good, though.
Thank you. how do you get to the point where you're like, I'm just going to let this go. I'm just going to do this. Because a lot of people will make things, or I shouldn't say a lot of people, but a fair few creative people will try to make something they think someone will like. Mm-hmm. And when you just said, you know, I'm not making something for anybody else, I'm making it for me. Well, that's a common sentiment amongst creative people.
Yeah.
I think ultimately because it's impossible to try to make something that someone will like.
Yeah.
But how do you not try to think about that? Like how this will be received? How do you stay in your vacuum when you're creating?
I don't know if I do. I think I just go for it. I've gotten a lot of heat, for example, the tech deck that I made, the Dirty Wheels. Internet is savage. They will they say anything and they will comment negatively. They were relentless. Like almost every other comment was like, "Yo, bro, why'd you leave Dirty Wheels?" Instead of complimenting, like, "Wow, you made a cool piece of art," they're like, "Dirty Wheels, you
really?
Ruined the whole thing." So bad.
Because of what's the nature of that? Because like to pay proper homage, you should have been clean in there?
Yeah,
or what,
yeah.
What was
like,
the...
Yeah, I should have at least put new wheels on it. It's like, but that's not the point. Like you're...
Okay.
To me, that's not the point. To them, it ruined the whole piece. But where was I going with that?
So how does that make... Because you can't please everybody all the time. You can't even
you
be
really
conscious
can't.
Of it.
Yeah. I push for the direction I think the art should go in. And if a huge amount of people are like just really complaining about it, I won't do the piece. I'll be like, I'm not doing it because it's not the way that I want it to be done. The whole world wants it a certain way. So like with the wheels, I was getting a little persuaded into like, well, maybe the next one I should do should be like, you know, a brand new board. I'm like, no. So I was like, no, like To answer your question is I pursue it the way I want to pursue it. And if the world is like, that's dumb, don't do it, I'll probably still do it. But if not, then I won't do it their way. I probably won't do it at all.
So yeah. Do you have those crisis of faith moments, or is it just straight, you got the instinct for this and that overrides it?
Not in a prideful way at all. It's just...
Yeah, right. No.
Just the direction I feel that it should be, you know?
Yeah, the instinct for your own creation.
Yeah. And I do get quite a bit of negative reactions on a lot of the pieces that I make. Like, it should have been more like this or less like that or, you know, whatever. But it's like, that's their opinion. That's really cool. But, like, I made it for me. So it doesn't matter what... No offense, but what that person's opinion is, especially if it's negative. Like, I listen to positive opinions a little bit more than negative. But I guess I should be a little bit more open-minded to the criticism. But for the most part, I just make it the way that I feel that it should be made.
Yeah. That's commendable.
Yeah. Trying to be.
I dig that. Yeah. Maybe you need to make a 100 or someone needs to make for you a 100-foot person.
That would be perfect. Yeah.
And we'll center a whole, like, Meow Wolf type thing with a 100-foot person in the middle like, lost all of these things.
Dang, that would be awesome. That's a big project.
And we'll make, like, his keys and stuff.
We have the Kissing Sailor, too. I don't know how tall that is, but that's pretty close.
Yeah. That might be too much Ecto Cooler for them.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't like it. I should bring some pieces up to it, though. We still have that?
Yeah. I think it was, for the, anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, in Sarasota by the Bay, we have this statue that's called...
The Kissing Sailors?
You know what it's called?
Unconditional Surrender.
Unconditional Surrender. Thank you, Seth. And it depicts a sailor embracing a woman after coming back from war or whatever, and they're quite large.
Yeah. Yep.
But they were stricken from the record at one point, but I think they're back.
Yeah. People make a stink over something. It's a right. piece of art, guys. Like, yeah. And if art's not provoking you and making you feel a certain way, then it's probably not that great of art. And yeah, you should be moved a little bit. It's okay to feel a little like, ow. I kind of like that a little bit more. I would lean towards doing edgy stuff realistically. If I ever push beyond large pieces, I'd probably go in that edgy direction. Make people uncomfortable.
Well, you could build like a giant safety razor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With, yep.
Someone could dream with that. I mean, it's such a limitless world, and I don't mean to be like that, but when I see things like this, it's inspiring to me too. So it's very cool to see, and I look forward to people being able to see this. So I know we'll link to your website. People can see it there. Do you have any places that you know of that you'll be coming up in calendar year 2024 around here where people will be able to see your stuff in person?
Next month, actually. There's a toy convention up in Tampa. They invited me up to come put my pieces in there that are all toy related.
Perfect. That Furby chair will be awesome.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah. So they gave me like a really dope spot that's right next to the early Batman, the 90s Batmobile motorcycle. I think 90s or 2000s. I don't remember. But the Batmobile motorcycle. Yeah.
The Batcycle.
There you go. Yeah.
That's prime placement.
Yeah. I was like, heck yeah, I'll be next to that.
You'll find me next to the Batcycle.
Yeah. Big deal. Yeah. Just a slight flex. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So when is that?
23rd and 24th, I believe.
Of July?
July, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So we'll make sure your episode will be out before then. We'll make sure we got links to that so everybody can come see it in
person.
Please
come, yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot.
Please.
And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to let any cat out of the bag. And I know I kind of asked you this before, but now's the spot.
All right, hit me.
What's your dream piece? If you had a blank check and you could make anything you wanted, any size, any materials, you name it. What's the fantasy piece?
I know this is such a boring answer for your question. It's such a good question, but this is a boring one.
No such
thing. Tech deck. That was my one piece I've always wanted to make.
Yeah.
Since I was a kid, and so I made that. Yeah.
So the tech deck preceded the spray paint can?
100%. Yeah. That's the OG. That is the piece I've always wanted to make, and yeah, I did it. So. Yeah, that was the one.
Those are so cool.
Yeah. Dang it. I wish I had a better answer, but definitely the real answer. That's probably the Dumb and Dumber van would be the second one. I've always wanted to make that.
The Shaggin' Wagon. Oh, that would be so cool.
But that'd be a scale to scale, like a replica. Again, paying homage to the I love that movie. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't beat a classic.
Yeah.
Well, Guac, I really appreciate you coming down, man. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing. I can't wait for people to see your art. We're definitely going to help you get it out there. And
thank you, man. Appreciate
I can't wait
it.
For people to see it in person because it does put you there right away.
Yeah,
so
cool.
Thank you for putting me there, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you,
awesome.
Man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries.
Man, appreciate it.